Hey, this is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction show. Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Joel Elston here. It is Thursday, January the 5th, 2017. Happy New Year, everybody. And the first episode for us of this brand new year, we are continuing our ongoing discussion of Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. We've done a few episodes now. We've actually done three of them, and we're about to do the fourth, which is on Chapter 5. I know that sounds weird, but we skipped Chapter 1. We started with Chapter 2 on our first episode on this particular series. So if you're following along with us, you want to go to Chapter 5. Hopefully, you've actually done your homework. Hopefully, you've actually read the chapter. But if you haven't, that's where you can follow us this week. Joel, we've covered a lot so far. The stuff that's in Chapters 2, 3, and 4, which are our episodes 1, 2, 3, are really important chapters because they talk about the importance of belief and building a burning desire for whatever it is you're trying to do in order to accumulate your wealth. They also talk about the importance of faith and how you build faith, and we really spent a lot of good time on that. And then the role that auto-suggestion plays in both of those things. So that's the foundation. And now we're starting to look at the role that specialized knowledge plays in building a business or achieving career success or whatever it might be. So it's a natural next step. What's really interesting is that specialized knowledge is even more important today than it was back in the day of Napoleon Hill. I mean, go figure.
That's what's sort of, again, we say every week when we talk about this book, how far ahead he was in his thinking and how it seems like it was written for today. And there's no way he possibly could have envisioned the world today. But you're right. It's so much more relevant today than I think than it's ever been in our society. And it probably will continue to increase in value as well.
I think it probably will. Anybody who is alive today and has been alive for at least, say, 30 or 40 years knows the phenomenon of just how fast technology is increasing. And it's not like that's new to us and we're the first generations to have that. I mean, our parents' generations also experienced it. They just experienced it at a slower pace. But when you consider where the world was and where the United States was back, say, around the turn of the 20th century, technologically speaking, it was fairly backward, but there was already a certain momentum in place. The United States during the late 1800s had experienced a surge of economic activity. There were a lot of, I guess you could call them get-rich stories or O. Henry stories or whatever, people who started with nothing and became millionaires during their lifetime and so forth. It was a new phenomenon, but it was starting to happen. And a lot of it was tied to very, by our standards today, very simple technological advances, how to, you know, build a motor car faster. You know, Henry Ford figured out how to build a motor car in, you know, one car every 8 seconds or something like that. And there were a lot of advances like that taking place. So the phenomenon already existed. It's just that it's gotten faster and faster over time.
Well, and that's you always hear these comparisons. We have gone further in the last 5 years than we have, in the previous 100 or whatever. And you know, what sort of put it in perspective for me was the entire Library of Congress. Everything, just an incredible amount of data could be totally accessed on a tiny cell phone at this point.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
I mean, all the medical information ever known to man, again, accessed from our cell phone at any point in time. So the concept to not only has the speed of development, and I think this comes full circle, it isn't just this the how fast we're growing in these areas, but it's also our ability to access the knowledge so quickly without having to spend, you can specialize in many things without having to spend your life specializing, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
it used to be one of my mentors and probably one of my favorite people on the planet. His name is Dr. Sherman Master, and I work with him on a weekly basis now, and I've known him for years. And he was the first doctor medical doctor that I ever heard utter the words, I don't know. And
which is a credit to him.
Which is why we're best friends to this day, is because he had that ability to say that. And he, you know, he's a psychiatrist that has been around for many, many years, and his knowledge is as deep and as strong as anyone in the country. He really is great at his craft. And he says often, I don't know. However, the beautiful thing about today is I can find out really quickly for you. And he now, even though he's older and he's been around for many, many years, he has access to all of this information. And he, and from his perspective, he says there's no greater time to be alive, at least for information being available, than right now. And I think the information piece is allows us to look at specialized knowledge as there's no better time to have this concept, because you can specialize very quickly.
Oh, yes. You can specialize very quickly. And in fact, I don't know if you knew this, Joel. There's an actual law. You know, we have like, there's the law of attraction, obviously, and there's a law of gravity. But there are also these other things like the Peter principle, you know, and Murphy's law and all that kind of thing. Well, there's one of those laws that applies to this concept. It's called Moore's Law. And it's named after the co-founder of Intel, the company that makes computer chips. His name is Gordon Moore, and he made this law back in 1965, well before the computer revolution really took hold. He noticed that the number of transistors, a transistor being, of course, an electronic component, he said the number of transistors per square inch on integrated circuits had doubled every year since their invention, and he predicted that the trend would continue into the foreseeable future. Well, a transistor, if you have ever seen a transistor, it's a little thing about, an eighth to a quarter of an inch in size, and it's on a circuit board. And you try to imagine, well, how do you get more of those onto a circuit board? And it seemed impossible. So a lot of people, the first time they heard about Moore's Law, rejected it. What they failed to take into account was the ability to miniaturize it. So today we have computer chips that can hold the equivalent of millions, hundreds of millions of these transistors. And the trend, as far as I can see, hasn't stopped. The trend continues to this day. So today, what do we have? Today we have terabyte drives. We have, solid-state drives. So that you don't even have the spinning disk anymore. The data thing is in some people's view, out of control. I mean, the amount of data that is able to be collected, like you pointed out, you can put the entire Library of Congress on a cell phone. And a lot of people have said, well, you know, we've reached it. We're here. And I say, no, it's still not done yet. I mean, look at what you and I talk about. We talk about quantum theory. We talk about the law of attraction. We talk about subatomic stuff happening and using that to our advantage through the power of our minds. Well, if we can do that with the power of our minds, you can bet your bottom dollar that somewhere along the line, some technologist somewhere is going to figure out a way to apply it practically. So we're going to reach the point where you can put the entire Library of Congress on a molecule. And we're not that far away. Nanotechnology is about putting huge amounts of information onto something the size of a virus.
Yes. Well, as this progresses, when we talk in 20 years, and we're doing our show from the bench in Florida live, I really believe that there will be the beginnings, if not already, where they will be able to have matched brain waves, where you literally can access Google and ask information with thought. I really believe that.
I think you're right.
And the idea that minimally you're wearing a pair of glasses and you could say it and read it on your glasses, but I believe you can already do that, but way beyond that, where it just goes beyond anything that Napoleon Hill, when he was writing this book, had a way of even imagining happening,
right?
Because that technology doesn't get there. He talks about one of the things in this chapter. He talks about it pays to know how to purchase knowledge. Well, and he gets into through education and experience, with cooperation of others, and college and universities, public libraries, specialized training courses. they're, as we said, the internet wasn't even thought of when he was writing this book. Now all this is there. He would be blown away that we could access this knowledge. You know, children, small kids have access to limitless information that is, again, can be beneficial. There's also a lot of good porn for teenagers out there, but it covers a lot of bases.
I'm sure you just reassured a whole bunch of parents out there.
Well, I've always laughed at when my son TJ would, I said, look, I'm going to check your cell phone history and all that, and he said, thanks for the heads up.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, okay, never mind. It's just, you're going to do what you're going to do. So it's it is out there, but at the same time, it with everything good comes some bad. But it looking at what's available is just so amazing.
It is.
And when you see how it directly connects with the law of attraction and how we implement it, and you know the term mastermind theory, you know, we're mastermind meetings where you and I have a mastermind meeting every week.
We do,
I believe.
Absolutely.
We get on our radio show, whether or not, and we do have people listening, but whether or not anyone's listening or not, what we're doing is having a mastermind meeting every week.
Right, and, because a mastermind is anything over one.
Yes, anything over one. I have tried. When I say tried, I don't mean really, because I would have done it if I really would have tried. But I have bantered the idea in the past of really setting up an intense mastermind meeting every week with a certain group of people that are like-minded and thinking. And they've expressed interest, but I need to pull that together. And it is such an incredible tool. Anytime I've ever had a mastermind meeting, I have felt minimally invigorated, but also have really felt the power of getting, sometimes, like you said, two minds or 10 minds together that are thinking, while we agree on the general process, have very different backgrounds. So we get an incredible different perspective when we do that.
We do get a different perspective. And by the way, I want to go back to something you mentioned. You talked about how Hill talks about taking correspondence courses and how similar that is to the cheap or the even free courses you can take online today. You can actually get a complete degree online for free, which is it's unbelievable. And it almost defies what he talked about, because in this chapter, he actually talks about how important it is to pay for the knowledge.
Right.
So free education is, and I'm sure it's actually true in reality, people who take advantage of the free education very often give it up. They stop in the middle. They stop before they even get going. So in one sense, what he said is right. You really should be paying for it. In another sense, though, the people who don't follow through are paying for it. They just don't realize it. It's not like they're paying money on it right now, but they are paying future money, because they're basically taking away from themselves the opportunity to make the money they were hoping to make in the first place.
Well, and there's you've sort of touched on my thought. You know, paying for things doesn't always mean money. Paying for things, the idea, if I go take an online course and it's free, it's totally free. Well, first of all, I'm going to spend hours of my time on that.
And that is a payment.
That is a payment. I expect myself to do well. And as long as I put myself forward, I can get an education now online, which I think one day you're going to have it even put together in a better package than that right now, where multiple universities, and this will never take away from Harvard or any of the quality education out there.
No.
It won't, because there's a college experience that's meant to be had. But if you, I've taken several online. I'm always involved in online courses. I love online courses. I take them from every direction. Coursera offers several positive psychology, totally free. Just sign up.
Coursera.
Yes, okay. And they have several free positive psychology classes that I've taken, and they're all from one's from University of North Carolina. There's some from there's a couple from California, all accredited huge universities, and it's free, and it's the same course they deliver to their students. that you take. Now, there you don't get any credit for it, but you can get a certificate for completing the course. So those are things that are available, and by paying for them with your time and your energy and your direction, it does accomplish the same thing, but paying for them is a prerequisite. It's necessary. It's what you're determining that your currency is. You know, if you're putting in 200 hours of your time to get a degree, that's 200 hours of your time.
And by the way, back in the day when Napoleon Hill was writing, where you had these mail correspondence courses, they didn't have degrees either. They give you a certificate of completion of the course, but that's about it. And yet, many people used the knowledge they got from these various courses, including Hill himself. He relates in this chapter how he took a course in advertising. And he was actually grateful that he was ready to give up on the course after, I think it was something like a 13 or 14 different installments. He was ready to give up after 10. But the company insisted on payment anyway because he had, you know, worked out a contract with them to pay it over time. And they held his feet to the fire. And he expresses how he was grateful for the fact that they made him pay the last few installments because it gave him the incentive he needed to complete the course, and he ended up using it in his own career. Well, it's a perfectly valid concept. I think where we're at today is actually a bit tougher, because it is easier to get a course where you don't have to pay all the installments, but that's also an opportunity built in. The opportunity is to follow through on your own initiative, despite the fact that you're not paying money, realizing that you have already paid in some. You have paid in your time and effort to learn the part that you've already learned, and it's only cutting off your own nose if you don't follow through and do the rest of it. So that becomes the new incentive. But it's also an opportunity for discipline. You have to self-discipline yourself and say, you know what, even though this is free, even though the money is not coming out of my pocket, I have to treat it like it is coming out of my pocket for my own benefit. Otherwise, I'm just wasting my time.
Well, I do that. And one of the things I noticed when I started my private practice is I wanted to be philanthropic and offer, make it known that I'm doing some pro bono work and trying to make stuff available to the average person who couldn't afford my fee. And I thought that would be an honorable thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quickly amazed at people who were given free opportunity to attend and participate were often late, were no shows. They put no value in what I was offering because they weren't paying for it. And it really made me realize they need to pay something, and it needs to have a, not hurt them, but have enough word value. You know, I mean, instead of my $100 an hour fee, they may be paying, $25 if that's all they can truly afford, but they need to pay something because they need to see value in it. I knew that, a friend of mine at several McDonald's restaurants in Florida, he owned several of them. And I was always baffled until he explained why. He made his employees pay for their meals. And I'm going, why are you making them pay for this crappy food? Which he didn't like that. But, you know. And he said, because if they don't think it has value, they treat it with no value.
Mm, yes.
And he said, so he gives them discounts, but at the if they work double shift, they get a free meal and stuff. But as far as just getting food, they do have to pay something because it needs to be viewed with value. And if people don't have value attached to something, then it doesn't, they don't go through with it.
Reading one section from this chapter 5 on specialized knowledge, he writes, anything acquired without effort and without cost is generally unappreciated, often discredited. Perhaps this is why we get so little from our marvelous opportunity in public schools. The self-discipline one receives from a definite program of specialized study makes up to some extent for the wasted opportunity when knowledge was available without cost. Correspondence schools are highly organized business institutions. Their tuition fees are so low that they are forced to insist upon prompt payments. Being asked to pay whether the student makes poor grades or good grades, I've just read that wrong, but has the effect of causing one to follow through with the course when he would otherwise drop it. The correspondence schools have not stressed this point sufficiently, for the truth is that their collection departments constitute the very finest sort of training of discipline, on decision, promptness, action, and the habit of finishing that which one begins. There it is in a nutshell. That's the experience you experienced with people who were paying nothing for their sessions with you, and it wasn't until you insisted that they pay a minimal fee that they started to take it seriously and realize that it was there for their own benefit and that it was worth paying the small fee in order to get the benefit they needed out of it.
Right. And that's I've seen this in university students a lot. The kids, the rich kids, that they go straight from their private schools to the state university. They're partying. They're eking by with C's, and they're really trying. But that kid who came from a poor family, who's having to go to community college and work and do these things and get out their own loans, tend to be more productive, get better grades, and get more out of higher education because they had to go pay for it, and they put more value in it.
And the interesting thing, too, is there's a very illustrative lesson in here. It isn't the amount of money. The amount of money actually could be zero. It's the way the person who's receiving the benefit treats it.
Right, right. And I want to stress, when I was talking earlier about people coming to me, I have had people that have seen the value in it, and they truly are excited and consider it an honor and privilege. So it isn't everybody doesn't get that. There's people that, like one man, one young man who was a foster care child at the time, he was younger. There's no way he was going to be able to pay, or his insurance didn't cover seeing me. But he kept up with, I probably spent I think he said 40 sessions over a period of 2 years. He said, "I owe you $4,200.
No kidding. He tracked it.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I said, "Well, don't, you know what I mean?" He goes, "No, I do." He said, "You gave me that. You gave me that." And he saw the value. And he says, it's worth 10 times that. And the idea that he saw it and valued it that much, he got out of it. If he ever gets in a position to pay me, I will never accept the money, or he will donate it to somebody or help somebody else get help.
But pay it forward, right?
Yeah, exactly. But the concept that he truly views it, that he sees that value that it gave him, is something that's really important.
Mm, yeah.
And so when we're talking about the law of attraction and specialized knowledge, it isn't just going out there and getting it. And you can, in today's world of certifications, you can go get certified in anything pretty quickly. It doesn't hold as much value to some people in the, like, you have the various certifications. You have a Google certification for AdWords. You have a Microsoft certification for this or that. And while those have some great value to some people, to other people, it's like, okay, anybody can get that. It all depends on your perspective.
Right.
I always laugh at or am amused that when you graduate from Harvard Business School, there's usually a line of companies lined up to hire you.
Right.
That you get job offers that you don't have to go look. They come look for you.
Exactly.
Employers recognize or at least acknowledge in their own belief system that Harvard provides such a great training that their employees or their students will make great employees. So they'll pay top dollar for them. So it saves them a lot of time. They go to where they perceive the value. Where do we perceive our value is the point of that. Is do I get value in the specialized training? If you really see the value, put in your time and really go do this, that specialized training means a lot.
It does.
If you just sort of phone it in, it doesn't. It's sort of like everything else. The perspective, your own perspective of your specialized training is key here.
And similarly, just because we don't have a business degree from Harvard doesn't mean we can't get work. It just means we're going to have to put in a different kind of work to get there. The people who went to Harvard, they put in tremendous amounts of work under tremendously stressful situations. So they paid their dues that way. Those of us who don't go to Harvard, that just because we didn't go to Harvard doesn't mean we can't pay our dues. Doesn't mean
we can't
you know, take steps to really, you know, grind out and learn how to do the stuff that we need to learn how to do. We can do that. We just aren't doing it at Harvard. That's all.
Well, yes, that's what Napoleon Hill's talking about. That's the point of this, of what we're talking. You know, paying your dues, putting in the energy, making it effort. The free education in the public schools that he's talking about, it isn't that the education is poor. It's most people view it as free and do not put in the energy and effort that it should be given to it.
So let's tie it back now to the concept of the law of attraction, which is what our show is about. Law of attraction states that that which is like unto itself is drawn, which is a very convoluted way of saying what you think about, what you focus on, is what you tend to attract and draw into your life. Okay, well, that sounds like a something-for-nothing situation. But in reality, what we find is it's very hard for somebody to stay so focused that they can do that kind of attracting without taking any action. Most of us, actually all of us, I don't know if there's anyone on this planet living today who's able to do it without taking action. So the action part is what we're talking about here. Putting the nose to the grindstone, getting out there, doing the due diligence, doing the work, earning the credits, you know, taking the steps that have to be taken, earning your way through. And at the same time, focusing on what you want. Focusing on what you believe in. That's what the whole thing in the first chapters 2 through 4 was all about. Developing your burning desire, developing your faith, and doing it using auto-suggestion. So every day you're focusing on, I plan to become a partner of Edison, like Mr. Barnes did. You know, I plan to become a partner with, I can't think what his name is, the guy who formed the Tesla automobile, Musk, Elon Musk. You know, whatever your goal is. I personally don't want to work with Elon Musk, but maybe that's your goal in life, you know? It's about combining what we know about how you attract things with the steps you're willing to take in order to get there. And that's really what Hill is talking about. He's talking about the broader picture of how you tie belief and faith and convincing yourself of that belief and faith with action to get where you want to go.
Well, and that I love how you tied it together, and I want to take that one step further. What we believe, this is the basis of the law of attraction. What we truly believe with all of our heart and all of our soul is our reality. That creates our reality.
It does.
If I believe I'm a loser, absolutely. If I believe I'm a winner, absolutely. It's what we believe. And within that concept, it's the same thing when you get to specialized knowledge. When I really believe that this is something that I am great at, I've taken additional training, I really am comfortable in doing this, I really believe in myself, that is what sells everything. That's what takes it for you. It sells it to you. It makes it a reality to you. And so that's why the energy and effort and paying for it, sort of quote unquote paying for it in some form or fashion, is so important, because you've got to believe it to make it real. And that's the piece that ties into the law of attraction. That's why it's so important. If you put no value in it yourself, then it has no value to anyone else. If you really have value in it yourself, that shows you're confident. And it gives that person or the people you're dealing with, wow, this guy is very competent, because you believe you're competent.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Yeah. It's basically inventing competence out of thin air.
It really is.
Which is kind of a weird concept, but it's true. That's basically where competence comes from. It comes from a combination of belief and action. And when you combine the two together and you're fervent about it and you're just determined to do it, then guess what? You're competent.
Now, that is the law of attraction, no matter what. If you're wealthy in your mind, you're wealthy. If you're struggling with money, you're struggling with money. It's what that belief system is what it that's the core of it all. That's the underlying core behind all this stuff, is what you really believe is what the truth is. And that's why this book was so far ahead of its time, because he goes through each section, but it all has the same, it all ties together with selling yourself on selling yourself, not someone else, selling yourself on your own belief of who you are and what you're trying to do.
And initially selling it to yourself, because you're the one who has to, you have to convince yourself first.
That's and that's the hardest thing, that when we talk to people, when I talk to myself about my struggles with the law of attraction, is what my it's my own internal belief system that has a problem with feeling a certain way, or I get stuck in a certain belief pattern that can become a very negative qualifier. And what I mean by that, it brings negative into my life, and I get stuck in that cycle. And you've talked about, you know, some of your struggles. We've talked now for quite a while, so we've got to see each other's life, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yep.
And watched how we responded. But you know, each week when we talk, no matter how bad the week's been before or what we were dealing with, we feel better after we talk, after we do our show. That's the point of all of this. And so breaking down what Napoleon Hill's trying to tell us is this is where the specialized knowledge, you can obtain it through these methods, but making sure you do it, pursue it, putting in your time, that's what's important.
One thing that Napoleon Hill, he did touch on it, but I don't think he touched on it enough. And I say that because I know in my own life when I first read Napoleon Hill, and I've read him a few times, I've read his book a number of times over the years, it took quite some time before I was able to overcome this one particular molehill, if you will. it was that I had trouble figuring out what it was that I really wanted. I had trouble figuring out what my burning desire was. And for the longest time, I didn't know what it was. Mike Dooley is the one who gave me the answer on that one. Mike Dooley basically says, if you don't know how to get from point A to point B, you aren't even sure where point B is, you aren't even sure what point B is as a thing, then just start taking steps. Start taking steps in some direction. Start picking up rocks and seeing what's under the rocks. Just start doing stuff.
Yes.
And if you do that enough, the universe, through the law of attraction, will guide you to find out what your passion is.
Mike Dooley is a big believer, and he doesn't phrase it this way, but what you're describing is the law of action. When you don't know what to do, take action. And it doesn't matter what the action is. It's moving. The movement itself will create what you're wanting. I often will post on Facebook, I want you to go after what you want with every fiber of your body, with great intensity, with everything you can muster. And if you don't know what you want, find somebody who does know what they want and help them get what they want. That Mike, will lead you back to
where Mike has go. A wonderful analogy that he uses. It's the analogy of the GPS. You want to get from, say, New York to Los Angeles, and so you turn on your GPS. And then, because you really don't know where Los Angeles is, which is kind of absurd, most people know where Los Angeles is, but let's say you don't know where Los Angeles is. So you get in your car, and you put it into gear, and you start driving toward Boston, which is the wrong direction, in case, for people who are geographically challenged, Boston is the wrong direction to go to Los Angeles. It's almost 180 degrees in the opposite direction. And Mike Dooley says, it's not a problem. Because your GPS, what does it do? It says, make a legal U-turn.
Right.
That's what the law of attraction does. The law of attraction brings to you events that says, you're headed the wrong direction. Please turn around and go the other way. So really the art and skill of using the law of attraction is learning to recognize the signals that come back to you. And that can be a little tricky at first because you're not used to it. But the universe does send signals to you. It often sends it in the form of 2x4s to the head, but it also sends it subtly, and you have to learn to pay attention. But once you learn that, and once you start recognizing, oh yeah, I do get signals, things do get passed my way, coming out of the blue from sources that I never would have thought of, you know, all of a sudden my aunt, who knows nothing about my plan to get myself a career in business, says, hey, did you see that TV show about how Wharton School is giving away free scholarships? And you say, what? Where did that come from?
Yeah.
But there's your clue. There's your clue about how you can get your education so you can start pursuing your business plan.
There's multiple stories of or accounts of people with the same idea. When you don't, I actually have this one professor that I know that is a very, very much law of attraction person, and he's had great success asking people trying to figure out what they want or where they want to go. Take the most absurd, ridiculous action you can imagine and start there. And you're asking, well, what does that mean? If you want to apply to Harvard, apply to be the CEO of Coca-Cola, apply, he said the idea of, whether or not, you're more than likely not going to get the position of Coca-Cola. We'll admit that. But his point is, take wild swings along with your other action, but take wild swings. Go out, believe it, go do it. And while you might not really believe you might be able to get CEO of Coca-Cola, but you might be able to get a good job within Coca-Cola. You might, the concept that you're looking for something by taking action. And
most important of all, be prepared for the feedback to not come back having anything to do with Coca-Cola.
Absolutely. The idea of, I call it walking to the mall. And I developed that by a young man who got out of prison, and his mom called me and said he was stuck. He was in a position where, he has a felony conviction. He didn't think he could do anything in life. Life had kicked his butt. All these things, right?
Right.
And would I help him? I said, absolutely, I'll help you. So I called him, and for every suggestion I had, he had a reason why it wouldn't work.
Yes. Isn't that what we do to ourselves? We're so good at self-sabotage.
Right. And so I literally had to back it up and say, okay, I need to do this differently with this guy. I said, give me your address. And so I Googled his address. I said, okay, 3/4 of a mile is a complex with a Target, a Home Depot, and several little mom and pop shops around there. I said, I want you to walk there tomorrow. And he didn't like that concept. Mm. And I said, with the idea of no expectations, but you need to find, other than you need to find some type of work. And he goes, well, I'll get my mom to drop me off. And I said, no, I want you to walk there because there's a reason that I'm suggesting this. And you'll see things differently if you walk. There may be something between the walk and I didn't expected to be as literal as it worked out. So we're as he's walking to Target, and he said he had a really bad attitude, calling me an asshole, but the truth was he said, well, this feels right. So he was walking. Well, there was a very small used car dealership. One of those places that has like 10 used cars there. And
right.
And so he's walking by and he saw this. He's a big fan of Mustangs, and he's looking at the Mustangs. And as he walked by, and he was talking to the guy, and the guy, he said, hey, you ready? Interested in a Mustang? He goes, no. And I would love to own this one day, but to be honest with you, just got out of prison. I have a felony conviction. The guy says, oh my goodness, I was in prison for cocaine sales 20 years ago.
Oh my.
And they had this conversation that started, and you probably already know that he ends up working at the car dealership.
Right.
It's up doing pretty well. He realizes he's really good at car sales. And now that he's developed the knowledge, he ends up with a bigger dealership and then a bigger dealership. And now this has been about 4 or 5 years, and he's doing excellent working at a Toyota dealership in Orlando, Florida right now.
And there's a really important point here, and I don't want us to miss it. You sent him to the mall.
Yes.
By foot.
By foot, on purpose.
And he never actually got to the mall because the opportunity found him before he even got there.
That's the law of action. When he took action, the universe fulfilled the void that he was trying to fill. When he was sitting at home griping and moaning about everything, he was never going to get anything going forward.
And he was dreading that walk to the mall. He was calling you names for sending him on a walk to the mall. He couldn't
Absolutely.
Imagine himself doing anything at the mall. He never got to the mall.
Never
but he took
the
steps. And by taking the steps, he opened himself up to stuff that it never would have happened to him in his wildest dreams.
I see this happen all the time. When I have people who are stuck, take action. And that action may seem so ridiculous to them. This doesn't meet my goal. I said the action will lead you to your goal. Because it puts you out there. It puts you where it's a lot easier to allow the universe to mash everything together. When you know, we were talking earlier about Toastmasters in a situation.
Right.
Go to Toastmasters. Go to meetings. There's all kinds of meetings of things that it isn't that Toastmasters is going to solve your problem, but there's going to be 10 people there who are all usually in a position of knowing where the jobs are. You'll meet those people. They'll see you. If a guy works for a major corporation and he knows you from Toastmasters, regardless of your past, he can get you in interviews you never would be able to get.
Yeah, that was the gist of it. We actually talked about Toastmasters before we started doing the show today. And without getting into the whole story that you told me, essentially, you use Toastmasters to get into a major corporation to find out where you can find clients. I mean, it was a brilliant stroke that you came up with to do that, but it showed just how easy it is because anybody can join Toastmasters. It's not like you have to have special qualifications. In fact, probably the biggest qualification most applicants to Toastmasters have is that they're terrified of speaking in public.
Right, right. It's minimally that. I use Toastmasters. I speak in public all the time. I use them to test my speeches for public speaking. So it helps me hone my skills. There's people that walk in the room that are just literally scared to death to stand up in front of people and talk. Mm. I didn't go there for that reason, but the fact that I guess that's the point of its existence, to be honest. But it's amazing the quality people that are there that are often – I've seen multiple connections in business made there. I've seen great people find great jobs through other great people. The idea that we have to get up – and I'm not selling Toastmasters or any other organization. We need to get up and take action. And that's where the law of attraction and the law of action – merge. It's that idea that there needs to be something, and I'm not saying that you can't manifest things without action, but most people don't believe they can manifest things without action. So that's why you need to take action.
You know, we're talking about chapter 5 of Napoleon Hill's book, Specialized Knowledge, and it occurs to me that you and I offer a public service. Our public services, we provide a tremendous amount of specialized knowledge about the law of attraction and how to use it. Now, we offer it in the form of a podcast that anybody can subscribe to for free. And if you're listening to our podcast right now, you're one of those lucky subscribers. Look at all the specialized knowledge we're sharing here. All it's going to take is for even one of our listeners to decide to take action based on the specialized knowledge that we're giving them here. And they will propel themselves forward in ways that they could never have thought of before they even started listening to our program.
Right. And sometimes it's the walk to the mall step. That's what it is. Sometimes that action is a walk to the mall.
Call it that from now on. We're going to call it the walk to the mall step.
That's what I call it at work, is working with my clients is, yeah, the walk to the mall step, where you following the step. One of the things that I have an assistant that there's four of us. There's a couple of doctors, another life coach, and I have this young man who is really an entrepreneur. He's an assistant to all four of us. And, you know, I don't want to pay somebody full time and neither the other three guys. But the idea, all three of us together, this guy makes a pretty good salary between all of us. And finding this person it was much harder than it seems, because I when I was interviewing, I said, look, I often will have very specific things I need you to do. And I don't need to explain why I need you to do them specifically, but I want you, if I say, take my laundry to the cleaners on Broad Street by the Chipotle, I don't need you to figure out, well, this cleaner's is closer, so there's a reason that I said that. And you'd be shocked at the number of people that have a hard time not trying to overthink that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of times if I'm having a business meeting or giving a talk, I will be leaving, like, the gym, and I will stop it. I will intentionally say, okay, I want to be going and talking over here. So I want my dress clothes cleaned and ready to be picked up on that day on my way to my next location. So I plan that way sometimes. So this guy, after going through two or three guys, he is so perfect at not questioning. He just takes everything down very specifically and does it. And he does a great job with it. And if I could give that instruction to our audience right now, if you're stuck, if you don't know, if you're hearing all this, I have to assume you're wanting some motivation. You're searching. That's how you found our podcast. The idea of getting up and taking action, the walk to the mall step. If you're too far to walk to a mall, drive to a mall, take a bus to the mall, do something, go to a Toastmasters meeting, do something that gets you away from sitting around whining and worrying about why your life isn't working. Action needs to be taken. And once that action is taken, that's the exciting piece, Walt.
It is, because and this is actually we should probably include this as an instruction step. The most important step of all is, as you're taking whatever action it is that you're going to take, be prepared. Get yourself ready and prepared to have the unexpected happen. And what's that unexpected thing going to be? We can't tell you that. That's going to be up to the law of attraction to deliver it to you. What you can know for sure is that you're going to say, where did that come from? But it's going to happen. Something unexpected is going to happen. And if you persist, a lot of unexpected things are going to happen. The trick is to recognize them when they happen. Because the biggest mistake we make as human beings is to be so focused on just walking to the mall that we don't notice the used car dealership with the Mustang.
Yes. And there's the coincidences, or whatever you want to call them, where by putting yourself out there, the universe has an amazing way of putting you in the path of what you're seeking. I've shared the story before on the show about the young writer who was desperately searching in New York City for a publisher of his books, and it was a difficult time, and he couldn't find anybody to publish his books. He'd had nothing but rejections, so he's in New York City, and this is many, many years ago, but there's so much construction going on. He had to cross the street to go around a block that was being demolished. So he had to walk across the street. He's really down. He's run across all these things. This guy he knows from his hometown passes him at that exact moment at about 4:30 in the afternoon.
Which is a ridiculous coincidence.
Yeah. So he passes him, and he says, oh, my goodness, what are you doing in New York City? And after a little while, he says, I've been trying to find a publisher for my book. And he goes, really? I'm now working for so-and-so publishing company.
Of course he was.
Well, the beautiful thing about that is both people ended up doing pretty well with it. And they go back to his office. They sell the concept. And that's how Dr. Seuss got published.
Ah. Yeah, he knew a thing or two about publishing books eventually, didn't he?
He did okay.
Yeah, it took him a while. He had to walk down the street in New York and find a friend before he could do it.
Right. But the action of taking – that's the step that I will often say I've witnessed this a bunch, but I know a lot of unemployed executives. Like one man was saying, my industry convention is in Las Vegas this month. And, you know, I don't know if I should go or not. And they're unemployed. I'm like, are you kidding me? Is that the most no-brainer? Borrow the money from your family. It isn't a waste of money. It's how you're going to meet somebody. You're there with everybody in your industry is there. It's just whatever we have to take. Sometimes the action is clear, but your point is so dead on. Don't dismiss anything. Every encounter is a possibility of something. Everything between you and the mall and the walk to the mall is a possibility. Don't discount anything.
And if you walk into it feeling like it's exciting to find these unexpected things happen, then more good ones will happen. The the big mistake to make is to dread them, is to feel turned off and, oh God, I can't handle anymore, and just treat them all as negatives. But if you welcome them with open arms, even though you have no idea they're going to lead anywhere, and just say, wow, I appreciate the fact that, you know, I met this person who showed me a red umbrella. Why would you care about a red umbrella? You may not. But hey, if the person stopped long enough to say, hey, do you like my red umbrella? Well, yeah. It's a nice umbrella. And if you embrace that and say, that was a nice encounter. It's not going to put any money in my pocket, but I choose to feel good about that. If you choose to feel good about each of the encounters that come your way, more good encounters come your way until the universe finds the one that is perfect for you. And because you are so open to these encounters, you're demonstrating your openness over and over again by accepting them positively. When the good one really comes, you don't miss the boat. You catch the boat. You catch the train.
Yes. And that's how the law of attraction works. It works by you not only believing, but your action indicates you are moving forward. Your action matches the law of attraction. And that's where your belief system starts to kick in. And I believe everybody who has ever been successful believes in chance. And, you know, boy, I can't believe that happened to lead me to this. And the truth is, it had no option at that point.
Yeah.
Because you really wanted it. You wanted to see it. And that happened. And that's the beauty of all this. It's there. The law of attraction works on our behalf, or it works. It's either on our behalf or not on our behalf. But that step that Napoleon Hill, as we're talking here, you know, everything begins with this idea that your self-belief is going to drive the bus here, what you really believe. And in this particular chapter, specializing, so to speak, makes you, it isn't that it makes other people believe, it makes you believe more.
Yes.
And that's the point I think he's trying to get across.
That's right. Yeah. That the specialized knowledge is for your benefit. I mean, ultimately, if the specialized knowledge also gives you a way to, you know, sell something to somebody else or to offer a new product idea or whatever, that's great. That's gravy. But as you point out, the real benefit is what it does for you.
Right. And that helps so much that I watch this take place every day of my life and working with my clients. And it never ceases to amaze me, because I just look at this in awe. Like, really, this just works every single time. Now, never in the way we want. I have a young man that was a Division I college football player, messed up, came to me. And just through an incredible chain of events, by him taking action, he got another opportunity almost immediately. I was even shocked by it, how quick it happened. And he did that by doing exactly what we're talking about. He sat down, he took action, he allowed the universe to match him what his goals were, and it just filled the void quickly. And he said, I didn't know it would be this easy. And I go, I didn't either. It just was, because he just bought into it immediately.
Now, we've got about 7 minutes left. There's one other topic within this chapter that we really haven't touched on, but we should. And that is, once you've acquired some specialized knowledge, the next step that he recommends very strongly, and he actually spends a good part of the chapter on it, is organizing that knowledge. In other words, it's not enough just to have it and just to, you know, it's kind of there. You have to organize it for your own benefit. Once you do that, that's essentially what starting a business is. That's essentially what starting a career search is. It's organizing it. Organizing it, putting it into a method, an efficient and effective method, step by step, and then following the steps. That's what you're doing when you're starting off with, I'm going to walk to the mall, and I'm paying attention to everything else that I see in between. You're beginning the process of applying specialized knowledge of what happens when you apply the law of attraction, and then learning how to organize it in a way that is functional for you. In the case of the story you told, the young man walked down the street, he saw the Mustang, had the conversation, the owner of the lot had the same kind of background, the unfortunate background with the law, and it led to good things because they understood each other. Well, yes. That's organized. That's how you organize your knowledge right there. That's the first steps of it.
That is where everything comes together, the organization piece where you understand what you have. And this is where a lot of people also get stuck, Walt. And this, at least my opinion, you may disagree with me. The organization is important, but getting stuck in the organization can destroy you as well, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I know people that get so overwhelmed by the process of it all that they get stuck trying to organize it instead of letting, you know, the action is what is necessary.
Because feel like we have to make it perfect.
Right. And that's the thing. I believe the law of attraction, you jump first and then you sort of see where you land.
Yes.
And that's a hard place for a lot of people to get to. Let's throw a bunch of stuff up against the wall and focus on what sticks.
It was certainly hard for me. I mean, for the longest time in my life, I always wanted to figure out how every contingency was going to work, which, by the way, is impossible.
Right.
I've never had enough knowledge to figure that out, but it didn't stop me from trying.
Well, yeah, and you know, I've watched people, and I picked up on something for a long time. Years ago in the insurance business, I was with my father. They had the big fear in the insurance industry was banks were going to get into insurance. That was the big fear.
Yeah,
the local agents would be knocked out by the banks. Well, they spent all of their energy and organization, the independent agency association, of fighting the banks getting into insurance. And while that happened, the internet was invented.
Yeah.
And the internet destroyed the insurance business as it was known at the time. The independent agent, you know, it changed the business entirely.
Talk about missing a contingency. That one was totally overlooked.
It did. There was no energy placed there. So they spent all their time, energy, and worried about banks getting into insurance. And the internet changed the business in a way that was unstoppable. Now, it did reduce the cost of insurance quite a bit in a good way to the consumer. But that agent that was selling it, my dad's commission on some of his homeowner's policy went from 20% to 1%.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, that becomes an overwhelming number of financial loss because of what. So their energy was focused in one direction, and all of that was. And that's where I always say we want to look forward. We want to do things, but don't get stuck in the minutia of it all.
And interestingly enough, there were a small minority of people in insurance who didn't focus on that.
Right.
Instead, they discovered this internet thing and they decided to leverage it. And today you can find these portal sites where they'll quote you insurance from 15 different carriers. Well, guess who created those?
Yeah.
It was the guys in the insurance industry who didn't get all bent out of shape about the banks entering the picture.
Warren Buffett once said, and I love this statement, you know, so when AT&T basically is bankrupt. They were bought out by another company. They kept the name AT&T, but after the financial crisis and all, AT&T it still exists, but not as the original company.
Right.
And somebody was asking Warren Buffett what happened to AT&T, and his response was, AT&T forgot who they were. They were a communications company, but they believed they were a long-distance company. And they spent all their energy on long distance. And for our younger audience members, that doesn't even make sense what that means. But for us older members, we know it. But they've tried to sell long distance.
It makes sense to me because one of my first websites was to sell long-distance services.
Right.
So I know that one very, very well. And, yeah, right. It just disappeared.
It disappeared, and AT&T was left with. If they would have realized they're a communications company and would have got ahead of everything with the internet and all the other stuff, which the company that's called AT&T now is, I mean, they bought DirecTV. They understand. They're communicating. They understand that. Know what your mission is, but don't get stuck on one narrow definition of that mission because it's going to ever be evolving.
It is going to be ever evolving, and by the way, that's part of what it is to acquire specialized knowledge. It's learning along the way. It isn't like you acquire some specialized knowledge and then you're done. It's an ongoing life process, and when you make it a life process, when you make it a life habit, that's when good things continue to happen. Now you're not relying on just one good law of attraction thing happening. You're relying on the law of attraction always working to your benefit. And that's what's so cool. Joel, as usual, we've used up our hour. But as usual, it's been great. I mean, I'm loving this discussion. I wish we had another hour.
This is great, Walt. Always good to talk to you. And I hope you're enjoying your new year. And thank you to our audience members who are listening.
Absolutely. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.